of we've done a series of stuff specifically on Quixote recently, wearing a head covering. And I want to cover some of the last issues, kind of finish up the topic a little bit, and finish up really the larger issue we've talked about Jewish identity a lot. So a lot of these issues that we're come up with, and I'm sure we'll come back to it at some point, but I want to kind of wrap up those issues. So I want to begin before I forget to do this. At one point, this is Ramosha, to my knowledge, from a search and other places, I did not see he ever addresses a kippot for women. But I did look up briefly. I saw that there are some writings and posts can write about it. The short of it is that, in truth, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, it says that you should not make a bracha, you shouldn't go daven without a head covering. There is no differentiation in the Shulchan Aruch whether you're man or woman. And in theory, then there should be really no difference. In fact, like the Gemara talk about head covering, there's really about Yerusha Mayim on top of you. There's no reason to suggest there's a difference between them. And indeed, there are some Sephardi postgame, the Yaskel David has a psak actually on this, who suggests that women should wear head coverings. Women in this context primarily refers to single women or married women who are at home and are not covering their head otherwise. If you're a married woman who's covering your head anyways with a wig or a hat or anything of the sort, then that's obviously equivalent to any male head covering that we're talking about here.
Talk about girls below bat mitzvah.
Well, girls below bar mitzvah would probably be similar to a boy below bar mitzvah. Yeah, we're talking about the same type of thing.
It's the same gadol katan.
Yeah, in theory, yeah, in theory. But so here's an interesting question. So for women, there are some Sephardi poskim who say, like in Nachanami, you're right. There's no reason to differentiate. There should be some. That should be the custom. And indeed, there are some Sephardi communities that indeed have the custom that single women wear some type of head covering. Doesn't look like a kippah. It looks a little bit different, but it's some type of.
It would be a problem of begadish,
Maybe potentially you could argue that nowadays. Still not exactly getting to this point, which is that the primary minhag for most Jews that I know of is for a woman not to wear any head coverings, or single woman not to wear head coverings. That's really the predominant minhag.
The reason a man's toupee wasn't considered like a head covering.
So we talked about it. It was interesting. So I think there's an interesting question about women head covering as well. If you have like such a good wig that you don't even recognize it as a wig you wear all the time, interesting question whether that counts as a head covering too. A lot of discussion about that for women. But for men, I think we talked about in terms of kippot, the main point of a kippah is going to be about whether you and maybe society sees you having imta d'shmaya, like the fear of heaven. So, a toupee is kind of like a catch-22. Either the toupee is so good that you think it's like part of your natural hair extension, in which case it doesn't really feel like God's presence above you, or it's a toupee, you think that it's not that good a toupee, in which case it should count as a kippah because it's not that good. So,
Zion issue too.
Into the other.
Yeah, it could be a Mar Ayin issue potential also, especially if like obviously the better the toupee, the more with Mar Ayin issues, the worse the toupee. Maybe you don't want to admit it, but the less there's a Marat Ayin issue. So I think that's the only way to answer. I think that would answer, I guess, your question about toupees. So with regard to women, the minhag is clearly not for women to wear a kippah. I mean, go to any. I have very few Orthodox women I've ever seen wear kippot regularly. So the why is that so? So I would argue on two ends. On one hand, we saw in terms of the argument. Why wear a kippah? So we saw two explanations. The first explanation of the Taz was that it was based on Chukat Akum. It was based on rejecting and being contrary to the practice of the non-Jews, where they intentionally would take off their hats when they would go to pray, and therefore we intentionally keep on our hats, keep on our head coverings when we pray, and also when we go out to the street, we keep on our hats intentionally to differentiate ourselves from their nations. So this idea doesn't really apply to women, because there is no, as far as I know, you go to a Protestant church or a Catholic church, women don't really have the same obligation to wear hats. And, it's based on like certain customs that grew up based on gentility. And apparently, I researched this like very briefly, so I'm not an expert in any way, but apparently there's like some passage about some men or something wearing head coverings in the New Testament. So there's something about men wearing head coverings specifically and not women. You can look it up. I'm really not an expert on it. You'd have to I know as much as you do on a topic. But apparently there's something about men specifically, and women really never was such a legislation, in which case women wouldn't have like any obligation from a chukud akum sense of being contrary to what the non-Jews are doing. That's on one sense. The second sense we saw of why you wear a kippah is based on this minhag. That the minhag is to wear a kippah based on the idea of imta dishmaya, that, you know, God's presence above you. So certainly there should be, women also are obligated to have this, you know, sense of humility, God's sense above them. So some posts will say for this, oh, why shouldn't women have a kippah? They'll attribute it because women have a natural sense. They have the bina yatera, the natural sense. If you like that type of argumentation, that's great, that it fits here as well. I can't say it personally resonates with me, but if you like it, you know, that's another explanation here. It doesn't personally resonate with me. I think the better explanation for me, at least, is that at the end of the day, I think kippot, head coverings, really comes down to a custom, a social custom that has been established really for you know, millennium almost, where primarily it's been men who are wearing kippot for, you know, head coverings of some sort. Bella and I had a little bit of exchange over email about this, about, you know, historically, Bella pointed out to me that kippot itself, the way that the modern variation of a yarmulke, may have only come out in the 1700s, but I pointed out that we can see evidence already that Jews wore hats of some sort, some specialized hats, already long before. Already recently, Mindy and I went on vacation. We were in London in the British Museum. They have these beautiful Assyrian frescoes, in the British Museum. They have these beautiful Assyrian frescoes, which they pulled off the walls and. They pulled off the walls from Iranian, from Persian palaces, which is its own issue. But either way, they have these beautiful frescoes, and some of them are really tragic because they chose like destruction of certain Jewish things, like Lachish, the whole destruction of it. And either way, you can see the Jews because the Jews are all identified by their special hat. They used to have a special hat, and you can see in the iconography there, you know, distinct clothing that they wore. And, you know, historians talk about it. There are plenty of other locations where Jews are specialized by certain hats they wear. In medieval times, the same thing is true. And it didn't necessarily look at the kippah, but there always has been some sense of Jews having certain hats, certain head coverings that differentiated us from non-Jews. I don't think that, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu left with like a black Borsellino, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean... doesn't mean that there was nothing on his head. It might have been something. I can't speak to what he had. And I would say that I think sociologically, that custom just never extended itself to women. Women had their own obligations, you know, for head coverings, for their own issues with sneos and the like. But I don't think it sociologically ever extended. And so the minhag just never prevailed for women. And, you know, I think it's kind of like the chicken and the egg. At some point, wearing a head covering means that you have a sense of God's presence on top of you. You know, and once you have that sense, not having the head covering is a demonstration of, you know, being brazen and not having God's fear, you know, instilled inside you. If you never had that custom to begin with, so then the lack of a kippah, lack of head covering doesn't necessarily mean the same thing. That's kind of my own variation of the history of it, but, you know, there's what to talk about, but there's certainly, it is an interesting topic in its own right, but the really predominant custom is for women to wear head coverings as kippot and be worried about this particular issue. Any questions on this issue, comments? Great. This brings us this idea of head coverings and when to wear them brings us to probably our last topic. Maybe we'll mention one small thing at the end. That Rav Moshe discusses. They're rather two short tshuvas, but I think they're one of the most interesting tshuvas that Moshe has. And I was looking up and I actually did not find any other posting that addressed this particular issue exactly, even though it's a really interesting issue. And the issue is as follows. This, you can find it. It's on page 3. I see that the tshuva itself was page 4. In page 4, the tshuva itself, the first tshuva is cut off the very end of the last page. And the topic is as follows. What about wearing a kippah in places where you're doing something forbidden, something taboo? You know you go somewhere or you're doing something that, you know, you shouldn't be doing. Let's say, for instance, like, I don't know, I'm in a traffic accident and I have road rage and I'm really angry, right? And I know that I just want to yell. I have to yell. I'm just like, I'm going to do it no matter what. Should I take off my kippah first? Right? Interesting question. Or you go somewhere that, you know, it's not really right, but you're going to do it anyways. You're going to go to a party. You're going to go to a club, whatever it is, or you're going to go somewhere. And it's not, you know, it's not where a good Jew should go. And But you're going to do it regardless. Should you take off your kippah first? I think it's a really interesting question. It's an interesting question in the sense that, I mean, obviously, a kippah is just an example. I think it's true about any Jewish identity marker. Kippah may just be the most explicit. But should you take off the Jewish identity? Yeah, should you cover your tzitzis? You know, if you're a very from-looking woman, should you make yourself look less from-looking? You know, I think I think the question is really interesting. If you're doing something wrong, should you, you know, remove Jewish demarcation marks? You know, should you make it less clear that you're Jewish? And it's really interesting. Anybody have any thoughts on the matter of hand? You should. Why?
Because it's sort of a fill of a sham, what people think, oh, the Jews, I think you're doing better for the Jewish community, by not wearing it.
Well, it depends on how you hold, whether you're holding like a taz or whether you hold it into the shemayah. So if you're going to behave like all the other rest of the world and go to a club, then take it off. What's the difference? You're in chukas hagoy land anyway. You might as well just do it. If you say it's a fear of heaven, then maybe going to a club doesn't mean you're compromising on fear. Maybe it does. Maybe it just means you're...
Well, right now, I gave the club as an example. I mean, I don't think going to clubbing necessarily means you're doing something wrong.
Well, they say road rage.
Well, I guess they're doing something, let's say road rage. Something where, like, you're yelling at someone and...
Ball game on Shabbos, for example. And people used to get free tickets or whatever to go into the game, I heard that at one of the universities, I think it was Northwestern, if you were Jewish and you were a Sabbath observer, you could give them a ticket before Shabbos and they would let you into the game. I suppose you're not supposed to do that, I suppose. So I didn't go to Northwestern, so it's not me. But anyway, what I was thinking is, isn't there a Gemara that talks about if a guy wants to go out and do something really bad, he should dress up in black clothing and go to another town to do it? So that would seem to point towards you should take your kippah off because you shouldn't look like you're a regular Jewish guy. You should look like you're somebody else and do it somewhere where nobody's going to see you.
Yeah, there is a Gemara like that. I didn't bring out the sources. There's a Gemara, I think it's in the Avodah Zarah. I discussed that someone has to do an Avera, and there's so I've touched a strong gate, they're hard to do it. So you should go far away, some distant town, dressed in all black, dressed, be completely anonymous, and do that particular sin, far away, and then come back.
Or if you're doing something like you're getting on the subway and it's a crowded car and you see a seat and you rush to get it, and
there are countless of examples of things
that's not really bad. Somebody's going to get the seat and you really want it.
Yeah,
and someone could be, if they see a yarmulke, they'll make some. They may make a remark anyway, but it'll be worse if you're wearing a yarmulke.
Yeah. Make it you want it.
What happens if you're in Israel on the Jerusalem tram? The whole place is wearing yarmulkes. They all want to get out.
I mean, there are plenty of good reasons. Yeah. There are plenty of good reasons. Let's say you have to run to the subway because you're running to the hospital. And you have to jump the turnstile. Should you take off your kippah first? There are plenty of good examples you can give.
Well, today you'd almost be praised by the district attorney.
Today there is some post came from today that if you need to make a phone call and you go into McDonald's, that's okay because everybody knows that from people don't need McDonald's. But if you go to a non-Shomer Shabbos kosher restaurant to make a phone call, that's sort of like Marius Ayan or something, that a man with a yarmulke goes in there, it must be okay.
So we'll talk about Marius Ayan at the end. I actually do want to talk about that. There are some interesting tuplas. I didn't bring them down, but we can talk about them briefly at the end. But I think in terms of the issues, I think we brought up some really interesting issues. I guess it sounds like you guys are all favor taking off the kippah, which is an interesting position to take because the Moshe disagrees with you.
Gadolim or not.
I think what's interesting to think
but he hasn't lived life.
What's interesting to think about is what is the purpose in taking off the kippah in terms of what are we affecting? So there's the argument of other people's perception of Jews, both non-Jews' perception of Jews, Jews do something wrong, they have road rage, they do, something, there's some negative chilul Hashem with regards to non-Jews. There's a potential fear that other people, That's one category, issue of what non-Jews or larger society might think of Jews as a whole. That's one. Second is, what do other from Jews, seeing your behavior, what do they think is now permissible and not permissible? they see you, you know, getting angry and road rage. So maybe they learn from your behavior. Maybe, you know, the kid in the back of the seat learns from the father, parent who's yelling, you know, at the street. Maybe they learn to follow that same behavior. Well, obviously the keeper wouldn't make a difference.
Exactly.
Or some other passenger somewhere else sees you, or they see you, I don't know, they see you going to a club. They see like the firmest guy, you know, on campus going to a club. So they think that, you know, it's okay for me to go to a club too.
It's also, you're assuming that people who watch you, let's say the non-Jewish world, that they assume that this particular garment is supposed to represent some higher calling. They don't know.
I'd associate you with it. Yeah, imagine, you know, I don't know if they have to even know what kippahs are about. They just associate, oh, Jews, religious Jews, you know, they think these things.
They tell your rabbi on the street.
Yeah, regardless, and they'll ask you to bless their, you know.
Yeah,
ask you to bless you their food. It's the same, you know.
The thing is, people make a distinction to what type of yarmulke you have. Yours is supposed to mine for Yonis, plain black.
I got color.
Yeah, it might make a slight difference. Yeah.
What's wrong with Jews being wrong? In other words, so what? So you're wearing a yarmulke, you have road rage, you lose it.
Other people lose it.
Schlecht. I mean, Jews are perfect.
Jews are the
that's the history of anti-Semitism, exactly. You know.
They know they're wrong, so they look for reason.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm with you that, like, you know, I think that we should have a normal society.
We shouldn't be apologetic.
Not just that. Actions don't define a whole country, a whole nation, you know?
I don't know, it says nursing home scandal or whatever. It's the Jews again.
Yeah, but that's unfortunately, that's the history of anti-Semitism. Yeah. Yeah, so I think on the societal aspect and the societal, both the larger societal issue and, you know, what other Jews seeing you do, you could definitely make a strong argument that maybe you should take off your kippah. What about on the personal level? Like, is it better for me to take off the kippah? So you could make an argument, oh, maybe people now will associate me with this. If I cover my kippah, people will know I'm kind of hiding myself. Maybe there's a reason to do it. But in terms of, like, the psychology of it, like, myself, how do I feel about myself as a Jew? So we quoted that Gemara about, you know, going at a far out place and, you know, doing that Avera. But it's worth noting that case of the Gemara, it's, you know, it's multiple interpretations, but it sounds like that's, like, you know, an extreme case. And the measures you're taking to, like, distance yourself from that Avera are meant to, like, really emphasize how that's, like, a really foreign part to your personality, where it's, like, you're going so far away, you're dressing so different. It's almost like you're an entirely different person, you're an entirely different, you know, personality who's doing this than your regular person. On the other hand, you know, I just, like, got into an accident and I have road rage. Am I really such a different personality than I was 5 minutes ago? Just got to take off my kippah? It's not really the same thing. And if anything, I think it creates, like, a real disconnect in what it means to be religious. And it perhaps even gives the sentiment that, you know, I can choose when to be religious and when not to be religious, which is really unhealthy.
You're representing the Jewish people, how you should behave. Not, well, I can do this, just take off my kippah, now I can do it. No, you know you're just representing.
Right, but I'm saying not even the Jewish people aspect, just like even personally, just my own relationship to God, the fact that I can change and choose when to take it off, when not to take it off, I think it just leads to a very unhealthy relationship. And it also creates, I think, I would say further, we can read your Moshe Tshuva in a minute, but it creates a further sense of guilt. It only furthers it because you kind of like enshrine this behavior of this that this is negative, this is bad, instead of kind of accepting that, you know, I did something bad, let's move on, let's do tshuva.
How does that jive with taking off the kippah for an interview?
Well, the interview is in terms of like a monetary situation, but there, I agree that they're certainly the same, like,
that's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Halacha for whatever.
Yeah.
I had the luxury of wearing my, they don't want
to. No, absolutely. There's certainly I mean, that's the whole thing about, you know, the two Jews, the Jews on the inside, Jews on the outside. There's certainly, like, a lot to talk about.
They don't like me because of my kippah. I don't want to work there anyway.
Right.
Some people don't have that.
Yeah.
You don't have that luxury. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, I think if you don't have that luxury, then you are, unfortunately, have to deal with that disconnect of, you know, I'm a Jew at home, but I'm not a Jew on the street. That's the unfortunate reality. But I think on a religious level, so there we might allow you to have that disconnect despite it not being ideal because you need to have it for a livelihood. But to do that, you know, lechatchila, and on a religious sense, when it's a disconnect between my sinning self and my, you know, my good self, that's like creates this really unhealthy, you know, psychological about religious like identity, which I think is probably it's pretty bad, pretty problematic. But those are, I think, the main issues we kind of put on the table. Let's see how Rav Moshe deals with this, because it's really interesting. As I said, I really have not found anyone else really talk about this other than Rav Moshe, which perhaps is because most poskim nowadays are in Israel, and taking off your kippah, not taking off your kippah, doesn't really make a big difference in Israel. It does make a difference in America, and in America, the main posek has been Rav Moshe. Perhaps that's part of the reason. Either way, Rav Moshe has two tshuvas on the issue. The first tshuva is from 1960. It is Or Chaim Chelek Bet Simi Sadi Hei. This is source 11. I know it's top of page 4. He writes as follows: Yod Av Tashin Chaf, the 10th of Av, day after Tisha B'Av, best day, good day to think about tshuva and the like, 1960. He says as follows: Ubadavar Knisa L'Teater Ulmozion, Harei Hu Davar Hastur. So he says as a point blank, he doesn't explain why, but it's forbidden to go to a theater and to a museum. Why? He doesn't really explain, presumably because of, I don't know, what the images present that are not kosher. It's not entirely clear why. It's not irrelevant to us, but you're doing something that Rav Moshe considers to be forbidden. V'ein shayach shiatiru lo l'asirat kovo l'yot v'gilu herosh v'yosif od chet al cheto. And he thinks that he says, as a blanket rule, it's not relevant that you should take off your kippah, take off your head covering, and add sin onto your previous one. And then what you're going to be doing if you take off your kippah, take off your head covering, you'll be just be having a second sin, a second aver. And then you already are doing one aver by going to the movies, and you're doing another aver by then taking off your kippah. So that's even worse. Vima sheilahi, if the question someone is asking is, be'chad shetakaf yitzroh alav le'lech l'sham. Let's say you have a really big Yetzer Hara, you're a really big movie fanatic, you know, as a kid you grew up watching movies, and you still want to keep watching movies. I'm not saying this is how I would postulate about movies, just telling you this is Rav Moshe's...
depends on the movie, too. He shouldn't just say, take off
drawing. Yeah, we're not talking about... I don't want to talk about the specifics about going to movies, but I agree. I agree absolutely that Rav Moshe is certainly taking a stance on movies and, you know, all leisure activities like a museum.
Documentaries and stuff.
Yeah. There's lots to talk about for sure.
British Museum.
As I said, I myself go to museums. So
if you go to the art part, there could be a problem with the art, I would think, is what you're thinking about.
There's plenty of, there's plenty of what to talk about art museums and the like.
How do you get to the science?
Yeah, I think Rav Lichtenstein was born the most Mako, probably because he was
I'm sure he's on Venus and Milo.
Well, there's a difference. I think I once heard him say there's a difference between in art, there's a difference between a naked body and a nude. Mm-hmm. Nude is like an official art term for, you know, it's different. You look at different perspective, but you know, it's what to talk about. Either way, Rav Moshe has a point blank forbidden. He thinks it's not right. Regardless, when it comes to taking off your kippah, and let's say someone has this very strong yetzer, he wants to go to a movie, he wants to do this. He's not going to listen to you. He's going to never do it. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you could argue that he should take off his hat, take off his kippah, and that way there will be no chilul Hashem. Because that way no one will know. No one will know to identify him as a religious Jew. It's worth knowing that Shomrei Torah is a code word for Rav Moshe as his community, like the, I'm forgetting the word now. Not the yeshivish community. Yeah. Like the yeshivish community, that's the code for it. So no one will know that you're part of the yeshivish community. So he says, he's svar gedolah. And in this tshuva, he says he actually thinks it's a good argument. And then there is a lot of logic to say that in terms of chilul Hashem, you could argue perhaps you should not take off your kippah. You should take off your kippah. However, avarak lemichavein l'shem shemaim, he thinks the only reason you should take off your kippah based on this argument is only if your intention for taking off your kippah is actually for this reason, because you want to avoid the chilul Hashem for other people. However, he says at the end of the day, fact of the matter is, if you're going to take off your kippah, you're most likely taking it off, not because you're really concerned about chilul Hashem, but because what you're really doing is you're just like trying to like, you know, do another avera. You're just like adding in more sins. You're not really thinking of protecting other people or protecting the Jewish people. You're really trying to just protect yourself, maybe. You're just trying to, you're just mezazel in another davar yisur, you're doing another avera. And Rav Moshe thinks that if your intentions and what you're doing are not so great, then you should, then there's no heter to take off your kippah.
Would he go so far as saying if you're watching Netflix at home, you should take your kippah?
Well, there's no, we have no Chilul Hashem concerns from Netflix
at home. But you're, but is Mizalzel Shem Shemai by Beatles, you know, there.
Well, there's no, but, no, but, it has, but the whole point here is concerned about other, in this case,
others,
concerned about other people's reaction to it.
That's connected to Chilul too. You were talking about road rage yourself. Here, the guy's going to a museum. Nobody thinks of it as something disgusting. So a guy went to see a movie. The guy went to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It says, oh, look what those Jews do. So it's a little bit different than not like disgracing.
He's thinking about that. That's what they will.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question to think about. Because as I'm reading theater in museums, I'm thinking to myself, like, most things that I watch, like, if anything, I would think are, like, positive. I don't think, I actually think it's, like, a good use of my time to go to a museum. Like, I feel proud of myself almost. Like, I'd be so productive, and I had like such an intellectually stimulating experience. I agree. I don't know if Moshe has that same mindset, especially for like in movies, like the theater. You know, some movies are great, and some movies are not such productive uses of time, I would say, or they're not intellectually stimulating the same way. They might be, you know, fun things to do, but they're not
stimulating. They could have images in them that are
So I think Ramosha doesn't have, I think Ramosha thinks regardless his attitude is people have this negative association and what it's going to look like for Jews, and particularly what other Jews are going to do based on your behavior. That seems to be a real concern Ramosha talks about in the next Jew that we'll see, that I think he's worried about here too. But the answer in this Jew at least is it's all about your kavana. You know, he thinks in theory, yes, you may should take off your kippah, but in practice, most people were going to take off their kippah, they're not going to do it for the right reasons. And Ramosha's really concerned, you can talk about this in second tshuva, that at the end of the day, if you're going to take off your kippah, it's just like adding on more things wrong. It's just adding another
thing. So it's better to be in dissonance and in conflict than it is just to shed it.
Yeah, because he thinks that it's just like avera gorer to avera, one avera leading to another. You're just like doing more things wrong. It's not, you're not actually trying to like do a mitzvah here by, you know, avoiding Chilul Hashem. That's Ramosha's take here. Let's go on to the next tshuva. The next tshuva is written almost 2 years later. Erev Chag Shavuot, Tashrin Chafet, 1962, writes the following tshuva. Ubadavar elu sholchim lemakom sholfin inyani pritzut. For those who go to places which have pritzut, which have licentious behavior, kirukudim shel bachrim batulot yachad. Like for instance, where they have mixed dancing of young men and young women, v'yesh shegam him atzmam ovrim al isur pritzut zeh. And some, not only are they just going to a place that has mixed dancing, but they themselves are participating in this behavior. They themselves are dancing. Mm-hmm. Even though they usually are very stringent and meticulous in keeping all of the other mitzvot, nonetheless, they do this. And they wear kippah that they do this as they go to the mixed dancing. Should we tell them if they go to these places, they just go to this mixed dancing? The kol shekein im him rak mirakdim sheyasur har yamikas v'yelchu begula rosh kedei shelo yomer haroim sheriku gozem utar. Should they take off their kippahs? I don't think I actually thought. I kept reading because I thought he referenced what exactly he's referring to. He's referring to here, like 99% certain, to young Israel dances. That it seems to be.
And what about a Jewish wedding in the 50s? My parents'
wedding.
My parents got married.
It'd probably be very similar.
Their wedding.
Yeah, it'd be very
similar. That's a
1930s.
That's a sudas mitzvah.
It would be very similar.
Sudas mitzvah.
The grandparents will tell you that they did.
Not by Moshe's people.
Though. No, within the 20s and 30s.
No,
like, similar to NGS White today.
Yeah. So there's a lot to talk about, but historically, it's a definitely interesting sociological phenomenon. Certainly
when he says it's people who are otherwise very stringent, that's why you think it's referring to the
he's referring to even Shomrei Torah, which is his code word for not only the modern Orthodox people who are not only so from, but even like the Jewish community would sometimes attend young Israel dances. I mean, like cosplay, you'd think now a young Israel would have one of these dances. I can't imagine it happening. Can't possibly imagine that happening anymore. But it certainly did happen back then. And so Ramosha is asking this question of, if you're going to go to these dances and you're not just going to, maybe you're not only going to go, but you're also going to participate, you're not just going to be like an outsider, but actually join in, should you take off your kippah? And why should you take off your kippah? Perhaps you should take off your kippah because, and he says as follows, Kadesh la yomra ro'im shirikut kaze mutar, perhaps people will think that this type of dance is mutter, right? People will see, you know, oh, there's like yeshivish guy, this guy davens so well, and he learns so well, and maybe he gives all the shirim and shul, you know, this guy is such a firm guy, and maybe he does all the bikur cholim, he's like, he's, you know, a real mensch, and nonetheless, he's going to this Young Israel dance, so maybe, you know, I can go to the Young Israel dance too. So Yom Adumineham Ki Yom Rushim Machar Shagam Shem Ritorash Yonokim Begulei Rosh Nam Yonokim Lasham Umirakdim Ukushiyechu Begulei Rosh Lo Yilam Dumineham Ki Yom Rushim Rishayim Vorvim Akkol Yisurim. So if they took off their kippahs, maybe then people wouldn't associate them as from Jews. They wouldn't realize they're yeshivish. They're this great, you know, great guy, great woman, who are very from. And they'd associate them, oh no, they too are another one of the Rishayim. They too are one of the people who don't really follow the mitzvot. And therefore, they should take off their kippahs, and it'd be better for society as a whole, better for their friends, for them to take off their kippahs. That's his suggestion. However, that's the question. He says as follows: Pashut laniutati. It's obvious to me. She'ein lomar lahem lavor od isur. So in the first tshuva, he said there was a svara gadola. There's like he understands the logic. Here he says like chad v'chalak. He's like very clear. There's no way you should do this. It's obvious to me that there's no way it should be over another isur. Af rak isur minhag, even though this is only a minhag, even if it's not like a full, we talked about plenty of tshuvas, this might not be like a formidable isur, maybe it's only a minhag. Nonetheless, there's no way they should do this. Af shadata omar yem is etu'alad, even though someone may argue that there is some type of positive benefit that may arise from this, that people won't associate you as Jewish, to be no chilu Hashem. Shomikol makom, ein lomar le'adam shiavor od isur. Because nonetheless, we have this principle that you should not tell another person to over an isur. And he says, I think he says it later, but part of what Moshe is basing on it, there's a whole set of...
He uses the word Easter when it comes to kippahs. This whole shiur is based on the fact that it's really never really Easter.
It is interesting. He is certainly playing with the word Easter here. He's talking about Easter Minhag, which is interesting. He's playing fast and loose about it. We've seen before that Moshe certainly thinks that, I guess I'll stop here and talk about that. We've seen before, first of all, Moshe thinks that, likes the Taz's position, in which case it really would be an actual Isser. We've seen that, so it could be that's partially based on it. But I think that for Moshe, part of this is almost sociological. It's almost like the association of me doing another bad thing and me, disassociating from my Jewish identity. And even though Rav Moshe has talked about that, he doesn't think kippahs are so essential to Jewish identity. That's why he doesn't think, we've talked about that sugya that Mar talks about, that you can't do, you know, anything that dissociates you entirely and hides your Jewish identity. Rav Moshe doesn't think kippahs are so integral. Nonetheless, they are enough of a demarcation mark of who you are that he thinks that, you know, there certainly is this issue, this problem. But I agree with you that he's certainly playing really fast and loose with the word Isser here. It's a very interesting placement of how he's referring to it as an Isser. In this particular argument, Rav Moshe's argument is based on the following sugya. There's a Gemara in Shabbos that talks about, can I do an Isser, perhaps even a minor transgression, in order to save someone else from doing a major transgression? So the Gemara has a case. Can I, if let's say someone put bread into the oven on Shabbos, and the oven and the bread takes a certain time to bake. And so in technical halachic terms, you're only, you know, transgress the Isser at a certain point when it reaches a certain baking process. When the bread, it has to reach a certain, when the, it starts to crust. That's the way, that's the sock for bread. So that's the technical when you're high of a korban chatas. On a rabbinic level, it might be high beforehand. But the question the Gemara deals with is, what if I see that and I see the bread in the oven? Can I now open the oven? Take out the bread, and I'd potentially be over some type of rabbinic isser, some type of like lower isser. I'd be transgressing at the moment in order to save my friend from a more serious isser. And there's a lot of discussion about it. And the main conclusion is that the answer primarily is no. You cannot do yourself a prohibition, even a minor prohibition, to save someone else from doing a larger prohibition. Because, you know, my averot also matter. It's almost similar to the, you know, Hayacha Kodmin, if two people's lives are at stake, whose life is more important? My own life is first. I need to take care of my own self before someone else. And that's true as well for mitzvot. This is a very large issue. It gets very complex at times. There are some tshuvos about what happens if the avera in question could be really bad. Let's say, for instance, there's a case of, let's say a Jew is being, like a young child is being, kidnapped. But kidnapped here also refers to like being seduced into joining a church or joining, you know, some type of non-Jewish religious organization that will prevent them or worry that in the future they will never be able to fulfill mitzvot again. And the question is, can I be over Shabbos? Let's say I drive my car to go stop them. You know, you can think of plenty of examples where this would come up, where there's no, you know, if it's the kind of nefashot, of course you could, you know, do it. But here the concern is not that there's a, you know, their physical life's not in danger, but your religious life might be in danger. Right? Your religiosity, your association with God might be problematic, might be, you know, endangered by what's going to happen. So can I, you know, can I do something on Shabbos, which is an Isser D'oraita, in order to save them? And so there's a lot of literature actually on this topic. It came up a lot in the Holocaust as well, these type of issues. And the answer is not obvious. It may be that for religious issues, we tend to paskin if it's like really you're going to be, you know, kidnapped by the church, should save you. But in other scenarios, it's not so obvious. And in general, this topic is very complicated. And for the most part, the general rule is that my averot are more important than your averot. Right? I have some more concern for my own behavior being proper than the effect it'll have on your behavior and your personal, you know, count of sins and mitzvot. And so Rav Moshe is actually arguing that at the end of the day, perhaps it's true that if I don't wear my kippah, if I take it off, that it will have a better impact on you because you will see Jews and you won't identify this person as a Jew and it won't, you know, perhaps you won't have this association that religious Jews can do this forbidden act. So it might have a positive impact on others, but it'll have a negative impact on yourself because you'll be taking off your kippah, you'll have this isser of taking off the kippah, which we've talked about. And Rav Moshe says, your own averot, your own sins take precedence over the potential impact it may have on other people. That's Rav Moshe's main argument here. And I would add, I think, in a perhaps on a stronger level, that I think on a psychological level, Rav Moshe is arguing about the isser, about taking off the kippah in, you know, this isser terms. But I think what I would say, at least from a, you know, a more modern perspective about the psychology of what happens to you if you take off your kippah, what does it do to your own mind and the disconnect, you know, that you create in your own framework, I think that that is such a powerful, you know, disconnect and so problematic that it really might affect your own religiosity going forward in such a serious way that I really think that that would overweigh, you know, any possible benefit that could accrue from you taking off your kippah and, you know, improving others' perception of you. That's Rav Moshe's main argument. But he adds as follows as well. He adds as follows also. The gum, this is right in the middle about, yeah, right in the middle. First word line is Isser. The gum, etzim ha-davar, hu ta'ut, de'im yodim otol ish shomer shabbat, yin palel, v'yiru shil ha'olech b'gilei rosh, v'kom ha'at pritzut, yim adu gam zesh, en l'chush kirosim l'kid, v'sharni en pritzut gam l'chusei rosh. He says as well, on a practical matter, this doesn't really work so well, because especially if you're going to the Young Israel dance, you probably have friends there. They probably know who you are. They probably know that you're a religious Jew, that you do other mitzvot. So the chances that you can like hide and pretend you're not religious are very slim in this particular scenario. And it's true about, you know, a number of scenarios that hiding by taking off your kippah doesn't really work on a practical level. It might work sometimes, but at least in the case at hand, where Moshe is talking about, it doesn't really work. V'nimsa, and therefore what's going to come out, shelo yetu elet elek shiyomri lam shiyavir kol mitzvot Torah. And so Moshe goes almost to this ad absurdum argument, you know, where he says that in which case, based on this argument, the only way that this can be successful for you to take off your kippah is if you then become like a complete, you know, Russia. You just do every aveira in the book. And only then will it be useful for you to take off your kippah. It will be permissible for you then to go to the Young Israel dance. Because if you're the complete Russia, then no one will associate you as a religious Jew who's like suggesting you should go, that you can do this aveira. But obviously that's absurd. Of course, that's an absurd argument, and it's forbidden to suggest or to incite someone to do an isser, even if a minor isser. And as well, Rav Moshe says, I think this is a very important point, that it is incumbent upon us to ensure that every person does whatever they can. That if you have a yetzer hara to do something wrong, okay, that's what it is. That's the situation. Maybe it's not great. Maybe it's not good. Maybe you should do tshuva about it. Maybe you should think about it. But regardless, you should still work as well as you can to do, you know, every other thing you can. Every other mitzvah you can do, you should still do it. It's regardless of what you do, you know, here, the guilt should not, you know, you shouldn't have this. And I think this point here relates to what I've been arguing about, that if you come to the mindset where I'm doing something wrong and you have this overriding guilt, you have this sense that, you know, my entire personality, everything I'm doing now is wrong, it's an avera, you know, that's kind of the wrong mindset. It's a very unhealthy mindset. What we prefer is for you to come to some healthy acceptance. Maybe I'm doing something wrong, but I can compartmentalize it, and I can instead understand that I'm a bigger person, I have a wholer personality, and the rest of my personality should be as much as possible dedicated to doing mitzvot, right? This is a part of me that this has a yetzer hara, but I also can do as much mitzvot as I can. So I think your motion's argument is that we have this general principle, do as much as you can, regardless of your yetzer hara. Don't just fall into the trap of once you've done one thing wrong, you should do everything possible. When you do the more aviras you do, the more chilas Hashem grows. And therefore, it's obvious that chas v'shalom, you should possibly incite others to do avirot based on these. You know, rationalizations that you have to yourself, that this is the reason I should take off my kippah. And that's Moshe's main conclusion. And therefore, he says, "Kushesh be'ir anashim ke'ilu shem shomei Torah v'gam b'chassim rasham u'mikol makom im pritzim b'rikudim b'chadome tzarich lefarsim b'yoter chomer ha'isor k'dei shelo yilam dumehem." And therefore, there's an obligation on the rabbis, on the teachers, that if there are religious Jews who are kippahs, who go to these mixed dancing, to go to the Young Israel parties, they, the rabbis should publicize the matter that it is forbidden to do so. And instead of focusing on, you know, hiding your identity, we should just publicize the forbidden nature of doing a sevira. And by educating people, that's going to be a more successful means than by hiding who you are. And while I don't know if the right means necessarily, you know, it's always going to be to, like, you know, put a pashkavil, one of those like Haredi signs and say forbidden to do so, you put a chair out. But I do think that sociologically and historically, this, in fact, probably is what happened, that over time, you know, the Jewish community now, you won't see any mixed parties at Young Israel's, and it's based on education, that over time, you know, the modern Orthodox community became more educated, it became more religious, and instead of dividing our personalities and, you know, between our, this is our, my sin personality, and this is my, you know, my Jewish personality, we've learned to educate people, and thereby eradicate the avera, the sins in our midst. That's kind of the way that education has worked, as a means instead of replacing, you know, this hiding your personality, hiding your identity. And so I bring these tshuvas because I think at the end of the day, they are a really interesting addendum to both the topic of Jewish identity as a whole, when to hide it, when not to hide it. And I think this idea of hiding it, not only in cases of, we've talked before of, you know, what the non-Jews will say about us in terms of anti-Semitism or personal threats to our livelihood or to our well-being, but here as well, there's an interesting question of personal threats or larger societal threats when it comes to Chil Hashem, issues of what this looks like, how it will affect my religious standpoint as well. And I think this issue brings up, and it's a really interesting question. Any questions or comments? Yeah, Bella. Yeah, it's pretty common that families dance together. I think that's pretty common. It's also common. I've been to plenty of weddings also where, like, by the end of the second dance, they're dance, the young friends and couple tend to have more mixed dancing. That happens too. I've been to plenty of weddings like that. I mean, like, obviously you ask like any rabbinic source, I'll tell you like it shouldn't happen. It's not great. In terms of the family, I think is, you know, maybe different communities, different things. I think modern Orthodox community, the families are, I don't think there's so much critique about that. That's not really so problematic. But in terms of the definitely the, you know, the young single people who are dancing together, it's certainly discouraged. You know, what to do about it? It's sort of an interesting question. I know a number of rabbis who would not be misandered kiddushin at such a wedding. I know a number of rabbis who will say they will go to the wedding, but they'll leave before that happens. There's ways of, like, massaging the issue and, you know, having a nuanced perspective as you know, public policy, what to do. It's what there's what to talk about for sure. Yeah.
An example that I may accept Rav Moshe on the issue of Tikva, but his examples of discerning are. Oh, I'm sorry.
Which rabbi? Okay. Oh, happy birthday. Okay. Now I'm gonna meet you, Bella, if you're
There's a first one, Blatyat, with the Rudniks. I don't know if you remember them. Yes. It was 60th anniversary, whatever, 70th anniversary on something called the Blatyat. So it's a very kosher boat, all sorts of fun. And it was the 60th anniversary, so they got up to dance. They took away the shkacha from them.
I'm fairly confident that there's like some shkacha that I don't know which ones. It might be the OU, it might be like Star K or something. Like there are some shkachas that indeed won't give a shkacha if they know mixed dancing will take place. I mean, oftentimes these things are like more. I know oftentimes the way it will happen is it's more impromptu. It's not official, you know. But if there's going to be mixed dancing, then there's going to be a shkacha taken away. Or I know for a fact that in like certain Brooklyn or Lakewood wedding halls, they will not let you have the wedding, and you have to sign a contract. This won't happen. And they'll even they have like lawyers write up whole documents that if you have mixed dancing, they will like charge you a lot of money. And I think I even heard of like a court case that this went to, and they end up settling or something, and they had to pay a fine for, you know,
right,
because they really want to avoid mixed dancing in their communities.
But I assume that a 80-year-old couple having a dance one time,
I'm with you that if it's like, you know, like if it's like couples dancing, it's not the same thing as, you know, in a wedding. It's small, not the same thing as the young people, you know, they're different issues.
It might be an interesting tshuva.
There's no svara linking mixed dancing and hashgacha dependency or not. I mean, it's just a political statement.
Hashgacha nowadays is very often about like larger public policy issues. It's not just this. There's a lot of things about being Shomer Shabbos, about a whole set of things.
Five towns. It might be kosher, but it's not our hashgacha.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that even as someone who certainly does not believe hashgacha should be so tied to these issues, it's not always so obvious. I just mentioned as an aside, there are a number of restaurant owners and managers who've been accused recently and in the past of misconduct that maybe on the coming of the restaurant or going to that restaurant, like let's say, you know, a restaurant, there's one in Teaneck, for instance, where the owner has been recently accused by a few women who were his waitresses of, you know, sexual advances. I think it might have been a sexual assault, improper sexual advances, which are reason enough not to go to the restaurant and perhaps remove hashgacha. But it becomes an interesting question then, if you're taking off hashgacha for reasons beyond kosher, because in all, you know, in a strict Yoredeya sense of like, is the food kosher and treif, the food is fine. So taking off hashgacha for non-pure hashgacha reasons become very complicated, because, you know, where do you draw the line? Is sexual assault one thing we'd say yes, but not, you know, Shomer Shabbos or, you know, other things you do that might be wrong. There's what to talk about. You cheat on your taxes. You know, there's a whole set of things.
Lashon Hara.
The whole set of things. It becomes a really interesting and complicated issue.
You couldn't go there. How's that?
Yeah.
Don't go. The guy's a rapist. It's not kosher. Don't go to that.
Certainly some of the controversies beyond hashgacha relate to this type of issue about, you know, who the person has to be. A lot of that, it does relate to these type of issues. Hashgacha is a really thorny and messy issue. As anyone who's been around the block for, you know that. I wanted to mention one more point about this issue, something David mentioned earlier, which is part of this concern, as I mentioned, about Marat Ayin. It's concerned about what other people will see you, which Marat Ayin typically understood to be some sense of other people will see you doing something and they'll think either it's okay or religious Jews can do this. They'll have that association. And so there is a lot of interesting discussion about, like, you know, what is Marat Ayin, what's not Marat Ayin. So example would be, let's say I have to go to the bathroom at, you know, at a McDonald's. That's a good example. So there are some tshuvos about it. I read some article last night. Someone suggested that there may be a machlok between Rav Moshe and Rav Asher Weiss about the extent of this. I'm not sure if Moshe disagrees. I wasn't actually convinced by the argument about what Rav Moshe believes. So I'm just going to tell you what Rav Asher Weiss says, because I think it's more convincing. Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva about it. And he argues that Marat Ayin in general and all of these issues are dependent on your social community. And if it becomes clear in your social setting that, you know, what you're doing is still like part of like a from Jews thing to do. So for instance, you see a guy with a kippah going to McDonald's, you can, you know, 99% sure he's not buying like a burger. If he's getting something, he might be getting water, but he's probably going to the bathroom. That's, or making a phone call, you know, back in the day. Like, there's almost no way he's doing anything else. So you can make that assumption. If he's going, you know, as David said, if he's going to a restaurant that some Jews go to, but the shkacha's a little, the shkacha's a little bit sketchy. So there you can, you don't necessarily have the same reassurance, and there Mar Ayin might be an issue. And so Rabbi Asher Weissman makes a very convincing argument that Mar Ayin is not going to have these, you know, objective standards that apply for all time, not these eternal, you know, unmoving standards, but it's really going to depend on society. What do people, what do your neighbors think about you when you do something? What are their assumptions? And this relates to a whole bunch of issues, you know, like eating soy burgers. People see a burger that looks, or, you know, or
veggie burger,
like Impossible burgers.
Yeah, put cheese on it.
Right. Maybe have like a cheeseburger with it. It's like, can you do that? There are all these truths about it. Like, you have to have, I think back in the day, the Chippetaco at one point, you need to have a wrapper to show everyone that, you know, that it says very clearly Parv on it. Yeah. People know about it. Nowadays, people might know more clearly that, you know, Impossible burgers or like exist. They're very popular.
And a good example is the Rich's Don Dairy Queen.
Yeah.
Used to have to put
the
carton on the table. Now they don't, because everybody knows there's non-dairy creamer. And if you go to a place with good hashkafa, then
yeah. So that's a good example of. So that's a good example where my ayin has clearly changed based on the time. And I think Rav Asher Weiss is. And this is the way I think we tend to paskin that Mar ayin really is dependent on the situation. And this would be true about taking off your kippah in these type of senses as well. Even if, you know, you did paskin against your motion in terms of the kippah thing, sounds like your motion thinks regardless you shouldn't take it off. But even if you thought maybe you should take it off, it shouldn't take it off necessarily in all situations. If you go to McDonald's, you probably should still keep it on.
A lot harder in Israel, because my kids have lists of mahadrins they do take and mahadrins they don't
yeah,
take.
Yeah, well, like I said, yeah. Ashkacha in Israel is a big mess. To be fair in Israel, it's a little bit more complicated because the issues there are potentially more serious because you do have an issue of like Shemos and Masorot, and I guess this year also have Shavuot issues. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more serious than here, because here it's really just about like bugs and treif meat.
That's right. I had a whole lot of how many chickens you have to slaughter in a minute? There are some that they require the shochet to do at least 4 minutes, and there are others where you can eat two's enough. So how good can it be if they have to rush and do so many? So there are mahadrins of all levels of mahadrin too. They rules.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big industry, big controversy.
What can they do if the hose is up here? There's all sorts of stuff that they do.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy about it. So, a lot of it, unfortunately, does come down to money.
Not all of it, but a lot of it. All
right, well, that's, there is another tshuva we mentioned, but I think with time, I guess we'll end here. It's not really about kippah, it's really something else. I guess we'll end here. I guess you can have any comments or questions, but otherwise, as I mentioned in the beginning, I'm not here next week, so there'll be a hiatus for 1 week. And we come back in 2 weeks, and we'll be doing the topic of, probably take us more than once, topic of 1 or 2 days in Israel for Yontif. If you are a diaspora Jew, how many days should you keep? If you are an Israeli Jew coming to the diaspora, how many days should you keep for Yontif as well? Yeah, I can send you where they are. It's like a few different places. It's mostly Or Haim, I think, Bet, around the Ayins. Ayin Bet, Ayin Gimel, Ayin Dalet.
It's Erev Chag, but it can't be that.
Oh, yeah, I think I just skimmed it quickly.
I know where the house is.
Yeah, I don't think it's Erev Chag. It's, what is it?
Number 12.
Yisru Chag.
Oh,
it's okay. Israel. Yeah, I think I just read it quickly, yeah.
The
day after, yeah.
Right after Shavuos, he starts writing.
Yeah.